McConnell here. I've told you many times how great my Dormia mattress is. You too can wake up feeling refreshed and more energetic. Get to Dormia this month and test a bed to register to win a baseball outing for four with me in September. Dormia in the Florence and Tri-County Malls, Kenwood, Indianapolis, Columbus, and Dayton. Thanks and enjoy the podcast.
700 WLW Podcast. Check out Mike McConnell weekday mornings 9 to noon on 700 WLW.
All right, back at it. Let's bring a guest into the mix. My guest has been on the program before, but it's been a while. Jared Taylor, he would be, from American Renaissance. That'd be the publication. And taking a look here at the Hispanic population in America, where they stand with regard to poverty, crime, and more. And I guess when looking at these numbers, we can't look strictly at illegals. We have to lump them all together. But Jared Taylor, I'll ask you that. This would be the numbers for all Hispanics in America, true? Hold on, try that again.
Possible. We've broken out illegals, but sometimes that's not possible. And also, it's important to know that the Hispanic population is quite varied in and of itself. Two-thirds of Hispanics are Mexicans, but then the other third are a whole mix, including Cubans, Central Americans, Puerto Ricans, etc.
And you sort of break down, where, as best you can, where they come from and how well they do. Typically, Cubans in this country do pretty well.
Yes, that's right. Cubans, every other Hispanic group.
By a long shot. I mean, I guess as I look at this, I'm trying to look at a graph. The Cuban, their average income would exceed perhaps $40,000.
Yes, that's correct. They are way ahead of other Hispanic groups. For example, what you're looking at there, that is net worth. The net worth of all Hispanics is only about $9,000. That's per household.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Cubans have a net worth of about $40,000 as compared to whites, which are close to about $85,000-$90,000. The Hispanic net worth is, I know this sounds like a brutal figure, but it's only about one-ninth or one-tenth the net worth of a white household. And interestingly enough, that figure has decreased over time. Over the last 10 years, the portion of net worth for Hispanics has decreased compared to that of whites. But this is not too surprising in a way, because the incomes of Hispanics are approximately one-half per capita that of the white majority. And increasingly, the ones who are coming in, their first-generation Hispanics tend to do worse than second or third generation. But even if you get into the third generation, you're still not looking at the income and education levels that are anything like the white average.
Those are coming, the first generation, obviously, they're coming here because they have nothing to lose. We would assume they have nothing. What is, when it comes to rate of growth, say second generation, what's the propensity to finish high school?
Well, Hispanics as a whole are three times more likely than whites and twice as likely as blacks to drop out of high school. That's a very disturbing figure. Interestingly enough, by the time that we're talking about the third generation plus of Hispanics, they are about as likely as blacks to drop out. That is to say, twice as likely as whites. That's another very disturbing figure.
It's a disturbing figure, but how would that compare to, say, other immigrant groups in the past? Are you able to do that? You go back to a point in time when, let's say, we had a large Irish influx. I would assume that as compared to the population as a whole, they were at the bottom as well. As compared to the population as a whole, perhaps their dropout rate was significantly higher as well. Can we draw comparisons with other immigrant groups?
Broad terms, whenever you have a European immigrant group, by about two or three generations, their sociological statistics are essentially indistinguishable from other European groups. It's really quite a remarkable thing, whether it's you're talking about the Italians or the Irish, Hungarians, the Norwegians. After two or three generations, you just can't tell them apart from the English who've been here for 200 years. That's not the case with Hispanics, and as I say, that's quite a disturbing trend. Whether it's in terms of graduation rates, per capita income, or incarceration rates, some of these are not always easy to break out by generation, but the generational data we have do show that even after three generations or more, the income plateaus out at about 75% to 80% of the average white rate, and incarceration rates still stay high as well.
What about illegitimacy rates?
currently,
it's one of those that the idea that has been sold was that Mexicans in particular are those who are considered to have strong family bonds, but statistics I've seen don't point to that.
Yes, it's a funny thing. I don't know why they have the reputation of having great family values. President Bush, from him on down, we're told that our Mexican brothers and sisters have these wonderful family values. I see no evidence of it. The illegitimacy rate for Hispanics is at about 44-45%. It's twice the white rate. And also, Hispanic women are about 2.5 times more likely than white women to end a pregnancy with an abortion. The child abuse rates for Hispanics are considerably higher than whites. And the only statistic that you can find that could conceivably be described as a good family value, if you're looking at it in those terms, is higher birth rates across the board. Now, when you've got an expanding population and dwindling resources, I'm not sure that's necessarily a good thing. But Hispanics are the group in the country that is reproducing at the most rapid rate.
So what do you believe in American Renaissance is the answer to this dilemma?
Well, I don't know what the answer is to solving the problem, but I think an analysis of this kind is vital when we're thinking in terms of what kind of immigration policy we're going to have in this country. It may seem brutal to put a population group under the microscope and say, well, gosh, three times more likely to drop out of high school, five times more likely to be in jail for murder, and say, well, gosh, maybe we should think twice about legalizing those who are here illegally and opening our borders to larger numbers of them.
Well, that gets me back to my point. I'm all for sealing the border, but what are you suggesting we do to those who are here illegally?
Well, I think that if it were possible to deport them, I think that is, in fact, what they deserve. On the other hand, it would be a big operation to take 11 million people out of the country, 11 to 12, who knows how many illegals are here. On the other hand, if we were really serious about making it impossible for people who are here illegally to get jobs, and the only way to do that is to punish employers who hire illegals, also, if we made it impossible to get any kind of welfare if you're here illegally, those people would go home by themselves. I think it's a very clear situation. They come here because they are better off than they were in their home country.
How do people get welfare who are here illegally?
It depends on the program. Some programs are specifically designed. You have to prove that you are either here legally or a citizen. Others are not. For example, you could, if you wished, look at medical care as a form of welfare. We have federal laws that require American hospitals to treat people no matter what their legal status.
Right.
And as a consequence, over 30 hospitals in California in between 1993 and 2003 had to shut down, completely shut down, because of this federal mandate that they treat people who are here illegally. Now, one of the problems...
What is a hospital emergency room supposed to do when a guy shows up with a stab wound?
Well,
you're going to treat him.
Yes, but it's not just emergency treatment either. They have to... Some are in for long-term... even things like dialysis. I remember one case of a patient from Dominican Republic, I believe, in a Florida hospital. He had racked up $3 million in long-term bills for various terrible chronic treatments, and there was just no proper way to deport him back to the Dominican Republic. You just run into nightmare situations of this kind. Obviously, we're not going to have people bleeding to death on the streets, but if, for example, it became impossible to register a child for school if he were here illegally, if we cut out all of this silliness about illegal immigrants having in-state tuition in universities, but the main thing would be, if we are serious about punishing employers who hire illegal aliens, then they won't stay. They will go home.
All right, let me get a break in here. We'll pick up on that thought on the flip side, but the line we're on keeps dropping out on me, and I want to do something about that, so we're going to break a little bit early.
All right.
I'm right back with Jared Taylor, so stand by, one and all. And what do we have? Since you don't have Willie in here, Burbank and the BBC should be hitting the air about 3:30, 4 o'clock, with, of course, Sports of Consequence, Earl Pitts, and Joe Nuxall and all that jazz. So it's coming your way this afternoon, 700 WL. Derek Beasley says as fog, clouds will be out of here, some sunshine later on in 76, overnight mostly clear, and a cool 55, and tomorrow fog again in the morning, sun later about 79. And And 61 right now, 700 WLW. Mike McConnell speaking here with Jared Taylor of American Renaissance. The web address for them, I believe, is AmRen, as in American Renaissance, AmRen.com. That's R-E-N, right, Jared?
AmRen.com, yes. We have just released a big report on Hispanics. That's a statistical portrait of the Hispanic population.
To the idea that employers should be punished to send them back. Are you in favor of getting to the point where we have a national ID that can't be copied? Because right now it's not that difficult to get documentation that can get by the average employer.
Yes, you're right. I don't like the idea of the government issuing IDs, but now we treat driver's licenses essentially as IDs, and I think people would get used to it without too much effort. I think under the circumstances, it's a necessary thing to do. You know, part of the issue with Hispanic immigration, particularly Mexicans, is that Mexico is the only nation that has a territorial claim on the United States. And I think it's significant that two-thirds of Mexicans believe that the southwestern part of the United States really belongs to them. And furthermore, this is in the report too, only one-third of Hispanic citizens, that's citizens of the United States, think of themselves first and foremost as Americans. Two-thirds think of themselves first and foremost either as Hispanics or as whatever their previous nationality was, Mexicans, for example. I believe that, too, is a very, very dangerous state of affairs. When you've got 10% of the Mexican population already living here, and Mexicans in general think the southwestern part of the United States belongs to them, we are really playing with fire.
Well, we are, but two issues. Number one, I don't believe that those who left a bad system to come to a better system would want that system to become part of the negative system again. I mean, no Mexican leaves Mexico to go to a place that's run just like Mexico. So that's one area where I have no concern. And number two, the United States is not going to give it back.
United States is not going to give it back, but when you get enough people in a certain part of the United States, for example, Los Angeles, it officially celebrates with tax dollars money the Cinco de Mayo celebration. There's no official celebration for 4th of July. And every year in Congress, the Hispanic Caucus introduces a bill to celebrate the Mexican holiday of Cinco de Mayo. It gets voted down in committee. But these are signs of loyalty to Mexico. The fact is, if you go to Santa Ana in Orange County, if you walk into one of those bodegas, you will see little caps that say Proud Mexican on them, in Spanish, of course, not in English. You see people flying Mexican flags. You saw, of course, during the recent rallies for legalization, a great many illegal immigrants here flying Mexican and Central American flags. I think that it is...
Well, they did it the first time until they realized what bad PR it was, and the second time they came out with lots of American flags.
Yes, but that's their natural inclination, isn't it, to fly the Mexican flag. Remember, there was a, let's see, when was it, about 1996 or 8, I believe, when the Mexican national team met the American national team in soccer in Los Angeles. The stands were full of Mexican-Americans. They booed the U.S. national anthem. They pelted the American team with bottles. There was a clear anti-American sentiment there, even of people whose nationality, citizenship, is American. I think that there's a very, very clear attachment, or there's an emotional, visceral attachment to Mexico, even if, as you say, the economy has been a failure.
Well, I think there is, but it wouldn't surprise me in that scenario, simply because Americans are not soccer fans. If you are a soccer fan, you're going to be a soccer fan of Mexico because Americans don't care for soccer.
But surely, if you are an American, it shouldn't make any difference what your origin is. You should root for the American team, not the Mexican team. I think that's where deep loyalties come to the surface. And, you're familiar with the Aztlan movement. This is the group known as the Mexican Student Movement of Aztlan. It has chapters in practically every university in the western part of the United States. They're very clear about it. They already even have a name for the chunk of the Southwest that they plan to break loose and from which they wish to kick out all non-Hispanics. They're going to call it Aztlan, A-Z-T-L-A-N, means the Bronze Continent. Now, I don't think that's likely to happen anytime soon, but it's a reflection of a certain spirit. And I think if we would do well, we would do well to pay attention to that, and we would consider that in terms of our own immigration policies. It's a big mistake to let people come across the border in large numbers who really have an emotional tie to the country that's just across the Rio Grande, and also who have this emotional sense that the Southwest really does belong to them. I think that's very dangerous.
Well, I think a lot of it simply has to do with a sense of inferiority within the larger system. And I think the Mexicans, just citing the statistics that you did, that there has to be some sense of inferiority simply because you're not up to speed. When there is that sense of inferiority, that the tendency is to pump the chest and claim you're proud, when even though statistically you don't have a lot to be proud about, you can be an inherently proud person.
Yes, I agree with that. The trouble is, it doesn't so that the statistical differences don't seem to go away, even if people have been here generation after generation. I think one of the most disturbing statistics is that Hispanics now are 19 times more likely than whites. Now, blacks are 16 times more likely than whites to be members of youth gangs. When we talk about youth gangs, criminal gangs in the United States, I think by now most people realize we're not talking about West Side Story here. We're talking about essentially blacks and Hispanics. This is almost an overwhelmingly black and Hispanic phenomenon. And to the extent that the Hispanic population increases, given this huge preponderance of Hispanic participation, that too is going to be a problem. Now, you had talked about sealing the border, and I salute your concern for illegal immigration.
Mm.
Legal immigration is another area where we should examine very carefully what kind of record people have once they come to the United States. And this is the
Let me make this point. One of the biggest problems you have with immigration is the concentration of people all of the same culture. The Southwest and Los Angeles being the most obvious example, you have people there who are never going to assimilate because the larger group with whom they're expected to assimilate largely doesn't exist.
Exactly. That's right. And at the same time, the United States has lost whatever will it once had demand that newcomers accept our ways, assimilate to our country. No, instead, we're happy to teach them in Spanish. I think one of the most absurd things is to offer voting papers, voting documents to people who don't speak English. Theoretically, to become a naturalized citizen, you're supposed to speak English. How can you really make an intelligent choice about political matters if you don't even speak the language of the country? So we have bent over backwards to make it easy for people not to assimilate. At the same time, I think that not only do you have this question of critical mass, but Hispanics are now spreading to every part of the United States. Over the last decade, the Hispanic population has increased at about 14 times the rate of the white population, and you're going to get this same critical mass in practically every part of the country. I don't think there's probably a single big city where you don't find a Hispanic language newspaper now. There are over 500 radio stations in the U.S. that broadcast in Spanish.
I'm a believer that shouldn't be allowed. Even though the company I work for makes money with Spanish language radio stations, I don't think it should be allowed. I think it makes it too easy to not assimilate.
Well, that's exactly right.
If somebody wants to start printing up a newspaper, they have the right to do that. But the fact that the airwaves are owned by the public, technically, which means they're owned by the government, I think that to force assimilation, there shouldn't be television or radio stations broadcasting in any language other than English.
Well, I'd have to think about whether or not I would endorse that view. Generally, I don't like the government pushing us around, but that might be one area in which it would be better to be pushed around. But no, you can be living in Maine or Massachusetts these days, and you've got a burgeoning Hispanic population that is continuing to maintain its traditions, its language. And as I said, the question of legal immigration is an important aspect of this, too. By far, the largest contributor of our approximately 800,000 people a year who come legally are Mexicans. And then there's a large number of Central Americans, Latin Americans, Caribbean, Spanish speakers. So I think just as you see all around the world, language...
I'll tell you what, I'm going to find myself up against the clock. Can you stick around for one more segment or not?
Certainly. It'd be my pleasure.
Is that possible? Okay. I've not had time to get to callers who are standing by and being quite patient themselves.
All right.
Let me fix this phone. As I will do that. And invite you to get in line as well. 800-843-2441. Be the number there. Back with my guest, Jared Taylor, American Renaissance. And the web address for American Renaissance, again, would be Amren, A-M-R-E-N, Amren.com. Find them there. Well, since the Reds have a day game, you get one of those rare summertime appearances by Scott Sloan, 9 to midnight. Does gay adoption make more sense than abusive foster parents? We'll find out. 9 to midnight, 700 WLW. All right, Mike McConnell, a few more minutes with my guest here, Jared Taylor. The immigration issue and more. The organization with us is the New Century Foundation. They publish American Renaissance. That's why the web address is amren.com. Trying to think of which point we were making prior to the pause. Let me work somebody in who's been on hold, though, for a long time with a quick point. Robert, go ahead. What would it be?
Yes. I'm a forensic anthropologist, and actually his statistics based on labeling are incorrect. If you take Hispanics, for instance, which is a group of other people themselves, and compare them to just blacks in the country, for instance, the statistics are different. Compare them to white Anglo-Saxons, the income of Hispanics and white Anglo-Saxons is the same. But if you consider white people, which would be Scandinavian, German, Italian, French, British, Canadian, everybody that looks white, well, then the income compared to Hispanics goes way up. But if you take all the groups and separate them, they're pretty much equal. And so that's why the statistics are stacked.
Well, no, number one, that doesn't make sense to me, but Jared, go ahead with the response.
No, that's suggesting that Anglo-Saxons somehow have drastically lower incomes than any other European original groups, which is simply not the case. The income figure on a per capita basis is about half in median, Hispanics as compared to whites. And these are government statistics with which I think it'd be hard to have an argument. Now, it is true that Hispanics are a variegated group. And as I said at the outset of the program, two-thirds of them are Mexican, and even Mexicans. You know, some are, you know, full-blooded Indians from various tribes. Others are more mixed, mestizo types. And so it is difficult to get an absolute pinpoint figure as to who we're talking about. But generally, the ones that have come from, that have immigrated, are generally the people, not the wealthy classes that tend to be white, but the laboring classes that tend to be more Indian.
Well, that's, you know, as an anthropologist, see, we do what he doesn't do. We pinpoint the groups. And so if you take Italians, Germans, French, Scandinavians, well, see, they're not white Anglo-Saxons. And so
let me just jump in and make this point. If you took Americans of German descent and set them apart, I have no reason to believe they're not better off than Mexicans.
That's true. Every group would be better off than Mexicans.
Right. So,
but if you characterize them as white and add other people that look white, well, then it jumps up about 10 times.
If the government collects their statistics that way, then that's what we deal with for purposes of comparison.
And the government's wrong. See, all the statistics. It's just like stopping somebody for a traffic ticket and having on the card black, white, and Hispanic and other. You know, if they look black, they'll put a black on it. You know, they'll just put a check mark.
Right, but I think for the purposes of comparison, the formula still stands. Thanks so much. Quickly, Dave, your question.
I really agree with the guy that you have on, because I'm basically third generation Hispanic. My grandparents were actually from Texas, and before them, they actually came from Mexico across. But our family makeup is German and English and Hispanic. But I've seen the hostility that I get whenever I go into workplaces where there's quite a few Hispanics until they figure out, with my last name, which is Allende, they figure out who, you know, my makeup. And they still do believe that this Southwest belongs to them.
I think as their numbers increase and as kind of Mexican chauvinism increases, I believe it could be a real problem. And if the United States today, if you had, say, the state legislature of New Mexico, if it came to be dominated by Hispanics, it very nearly is now, if it voted to secede, and join Mexico, do you think that, I don't think the American central government has got the willpower and the backbone to go to war to stop it the way they did in 1861.
Well, part of what I see now in Texas is a lot of the mayors who are near the border area, what they call the frontera, a lot of them allow the illegals to come across and give them, you know, all the same things that you would get as an American. But unfortunately, that I really honestly see that as, one, it's illegal because you're handing away things that people...
Yeah, wrap up your point quickly, would you?
Unless you can actually stop the illegal immigration, you're not going to be able to get rid of them.
Well, I couldn't agree with that more. It's what to do about the ones who are here is now secondary. Jared, to the idea of punishing those who employ them, number one, I will disagree with you on this issue. I do believe the U.S. government has the backbone to not allow, say, New Mexico, hypothetically, to secede, because once somebody sees that that's possible, then you're going to have the same movement in Arizona, the same movement in California. The United States is not going to give up those resources, those ports. None of that is going to happen. So, yes, I firmly believe the United States would stop any attempt to secede.
Well, I hope we never have to face that question. It's just that if we let things continue as they do, and that as people of Mexican origin continue to celebrate their origins and their festivals and their language and their way of life, I think it's not out of the question. After all, Vicente Fox, the president of Mexico, many presidents there, they have made a point of making it easy for Mexicans living in the United States to maintain their Mexican citizenship. And they encourage Mexicans living here to become U.S. citizens, but to vote in the favor and the interests of Mexico, not of the United States. They're explicit about this. They gather groups of Mexican-American elected officials, bring them down to Mexico, and then try to pump them full of Mexican loyalty. It would be absolute subversion by any ordinary standards, but our government just doesn't pay attention to this at all, or thinks it must be fine if it ever does notice.
All right, well, listen, our time is about up. I have to run. I appreciate yours, and your web address one more time is amren, A-M-R-E-N, amren.com. And you have the entire report there. You can download it if you want to. And Jared Daler, I appreciate your time, and one day we'll do it again.
It's my pleasure. Thanks very much.
You betcha. Take care. Let's get a break in the action and back. And to those who continue to stand by, which could include you if you grab the line, 749-7000 works just fine. So is 1-800-THE-BIG-1, and so many more. Mike McConnell till about 11:30 this morning, 700-WLW. All right, Mike McConnell back at it. Jared Taylor has an interesting accent, like a sort of a southern gentleman, a little bit. That little lilt in his voice. But now it goes on forever. And, you know, I keep hearing from these people saying, oh, you have to get that guy's a bigot, that guy's a racist. He deals in statistics. He doesn't deal in name-calling, and that's the key difference as to who I choose to talk to and who I don't. And in some cases, there are organizations out there that will lay things out statistically that others just wouldn't touch because they're afraid to be labeled. He's not afraid to be labeled. He doesn't care what you think of him. And statistics, although you can lie with statistics, you take the Census Bureau figures from the government and you get what you get. The end. To those standing by, Bill, let's go. What do you know?
Hello, Mike.
Yes, Bill, go ahead.
Mike, I just wanted to call with reference to your last interview. My son on August 26th was murdered by a crew of Mexican illegals outside a establishment in Mason, Ohio. As it turns out, the investigation has proven that they were A, illegal, B, had been previously deported for other crimes committed in the country and returned. They were employed locally, and we don't know whether or not there was any information or documentation to legally employ them. But obviously we're now in a situation, as your interviewer described, that we're importing a culture of, I call it a culture of death, a culture of violence that is part of their, I guess, civilly acceptable way of dealing with confrontation in this case, Mexico. And I just wanted to, let people know about that and let them know that even in places like Mason, Ohio.
So everyone, they have captured everyone?
They have not. The INS could not hold them, nor could the local police. They have one person and two people in custody, and they have one that fled that they have not found.
And how many total were involved?
We think anywhere from 3 to 5 people.
So the two in custody, have they been charged with, was it?
They were,
it wouldn't be murder, aggravated murder? What would it be?
Complicity to commit murder. They have not found a murder weapon at this point.
Complicity to commit murder. How difficult was, he's had to get into the, typically you're here illegally. I mean, did they have to follow a license plate? I mean, if you're here illegally, it is so easy to fade to nothing. because you don't have any paperwork. You don't have a paper trail to try to find you. I'm actually surprised they caught them as quickly as they did.
Well, they caught them because there was an immediate response by the local police department to a home right behind the location of the murder, blood tracking. And ironically, you know, they were able to match blood evidence on the victim's clothing as well as the one or more of the individuals in the house. But the other, who we think was wielding the actual murder weapon, had left at that point. Didn't, in fact, live there. He lived in another location. And when they went to his house, he had gone and hasn't shown up for work since. So he's fled.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, until you get a handle on the border, there's nothing you can do to stop it. In this case, hopefully they are booked and they serve long prison sentences. I don't care if they never get out again. I don't care what they do with them. But you're not going to stop. I mean, anybody can come across that border into this country.
Well, our concern is not only that, for sure, but how do they, you know, they're deported one time and they come back in again to commit the same crime.
Well, yeah, that's my point. They can come back again and again and again.
Yes, right.
And those who fled, if there were three others who fled, they might just sit tight in Mexico for a few years and come back again.
That is correct. And the whole idea of a national ID certainly makes sense. At least you can track them, I would think, at that point. But when they try to come back in, you know, jail them. You know, put them away, and I don't know any other answer.
Well, they're not going to come back in with an ID badge on their chest. I mean, again, due to lack of documentation, you can come in here with any name.
Correct. Yep, that's right. And there are people here who are probably making a few bucks.
And no one's saying we're sealing the border. We're just saying come in through the gate. You know, there'll be gates where you can come through, and we know who you are, and we document you. But we're not saying you can't come. Just come through the gate.
Right.
Pretty simple. Bill, I'm sorry about losing your son. I would hope to hell I would never know what that feels like.
Well, it is tragic, and particularly when, you know, they operate the way they do.
Yeah.
Okay.
No doubt. All right, take care. Ray, go ahead. What do you know? Ray.
Yes. I called because of your previous interview.
Yes.
That, you know, if they have a mass of them coming in, and they'll elect their own politicians eventually for all the states that they beat. And, you know, they can change so many of the laws that would be against the blacks or the whites just so that they could have their own...
You can't pass laws that are discriminatory. That simply can't be done. It's unconstitutional. But you do have secondary problems, and the problem you have in this country is the lack of assimilation. You know, my guess is in most suburban areas you have a family, even if they come illegally from Mexico, if their kids are going to start going to schools with other kids who largely were born and raised in this country, or who in totality are born and raised in this country, they will assimilate. It's when you don't have to go live with anybody who's any different from yourself or speaks a native language. That's what this country never should have allowed to happen in the first place.
Right. But, if they can elect enough politicians, they can pass laws to be in their favor.
Well, no, a law cannot be passed to benefit only, well, unless it's, say, affirmative action, but beyond that, you can't pass laws to benefit only one group of people. I mean, technically, sexual harassment was passed for women, but men can claim it. It doesn't just cover one gender. It just so happens that it does just about 100% of the time. Mark, go ahead, your turn.
Yeah, just real quick, I'm a civil person. You know, why can't the INS... round up all these illegal aliens and ship them back to Mexico? What is stopping us? You know, granted, we're a nation.
Well, number one, they're not going to stand there at the bus stop waiting for you to pick them up.
Well, they'll go out and get them. They know where they work.
You don't necessarily. You would have to raid every workplace in this country simultaneously to find out where they are, and you're still going to miss the ones who are working a different shift.
Well, you'll get them eventually.
No, you won't. Unfortunately, we've let this problem go so long that facet of it won't be solved. Now, you can go to the whole idea of finding employers so they'll, quote, you know, quit and go back to Mexico, but I would guarantee you'd have some million who would work their way into criminal activity, even though some are already. You'd have a far greater number involving themselves in criminal activity if they couldn't make a living legally.
Well, I agree with that. That's partly true, but the normal, most generally, they're in construction trades, lawn care trades, and home nannies and gardening of that nature. You know, you see them on the street, you see them working construction site. You know, go check out their paperwork. Do you have a green card? Are you legally in the United States? If you are, great. more power to you.
And we know that we know that happens from time to time. But you're also talking about a very, very, very expensive undertaking.
That's
I mean, you have to feed, clothe, and house each of them till their hearing comes up. Then you have to pay for their hearing, and when they're found guilty, you then have to pay for transportation back to Mexico. I mean, I'm not saying don't do it. I'm saying the problem is, number one, it's impossible. You'll never find everyone. You're never going to find them all. And it's going to be incredibly expensive to deport the ones you do.
Well, I don't know. It's a growing problem, and I'm glad you're addressing it on your show. Thank you very much.
Well, it's a good thing I do know, and that's why I'm here, as a matter of fact. Let's see. Tomorrow night, 9 o'clock, you tune to News 5. See Rich Wahlberg, producer extraordinaire, give a behind-the-scenes look at the big one, revealing secrets of the big one. Tomorrow, 5. Don't miss it. All from 700 WLW. Mike McConnell. I know. I think there should be no Spanish language television or radio station. The point is, if I move tomorrow to Spain, and let's say I'm a young guy, I've got a family, move the family to Spain. The idea is to become successful there. We better find out everything there is to know about the country of Spain. My kids better be good in schools. You know, learn their Spanish. I have to learn my Spanish. If there's a place in Spain I could move to where it was predominantly American. So many of them that the radio stations were in English and produced by Americans, that I could turn on my television and watch NFL football and Major League Baseball and news and whatever I want to, produced by Americans, and my kids could go to school with other kids from America. What are the chances they're going to successfully assimilate into the fabric of Spain? The problem is that they'd be making it too easy for us not to. I'd like to think I would eschew that and simply take the bull by the horns and tell my kids, you're going to learn Spanish and go to a Spanish school. But it makes it pretty easy not to have to assimilate. You know, it's one thing if people come, let's say, from you have a wave of immigration from Italy, go back 100 years ago, and you have Italian neighborhoods, and some still exist in some cities. Still have Italian neighborhoods, but everybody certainly speaks English. Everybody certainly understands how the country works. You're fans of American sports and all those things because there weren't so many of you. It's one thing if you make up a large neighborhood in a city. It's a bigger issue when you take over several states. And I don't see where there's any quick fix to this. I mean, to take Spanish language radio and television stations and make them all English is nothing but a kick in the pants. I mean, let's go. Let's go. You can be entertained, learn English. It'll be just as entertaining for you. It's just going to take you a little while to get up to speed. It might even be an impetus for some people. I mean, if you love soccer and you can only get it in English, might you not catch on to English for that reason? I would think you would. Then again, I'm the sensible one around here. Not everybody thinks like me. Eventually, they'll get around to that, but not everyone thinks like me. I had some requests for Jared Taylor's web address again, so it was amren, A-M-R-E-N, as in American Renaissance, amren.com. We get our news into the picture, and on the flip side, what do we have? More of this, including some of my some of the nonsense of the day, some of the lighter topics to come your way, because a ball game at 11:30, and this is the home of your Reds, 700 WLW.